Welcome to the OA Light a Candle Meeting Podcast. Visit our website at www.oalaig.org, where you'll find several speaker feeds with over 400 speaker files, forms for ordering CDs for these speakers, and a place to donate to keep this special service active. I would now like to introduce our speaker for tonight, Kimberly.
Hi everyone, I'm Kimberly. I'm recovering anorexic, bulimic, and diet pill addict. Hi everyone. Welcome, Nick. I feel like I should join in on thanking, welcoming Nick, and happy birthday to everyone who took a candle today. I'm very nervous. I was driving over here thinking that, kind of scolding myself that I didn't prepare something and take notes, because it's always nerving speaking in front of a group of your peers and people that you admire. And this meeting, this actual meeting, was one of the first meetings that I came to, and I sat like second row right over there and was coming in and out, was very uncomfortable and was very disruptive and crying a lot, and just didn't want to be here. I came in these rooms March 27th, 2011, so a little over 3 years of abstinence. What it looked like for me before this program, the first time that I remember having any strange food behavior was when I was 7 years old. I remember being at a birthday party and there was just so much food and I was just so excited. I couldn't participate with all the other kids and the family members who just were normally talking to each other. I would watch them talk and I just couldn't understand why everybody else wasn't like going over to where I wanted to go to. And I just remember that just felt so, I felt very different. I felt very separate from everyone else. I didn't feel like I belonged, and I had eaten so much that I had made myself sick. And I remember when I was in the bathroom getting sick, I was about seven, and my mom said to me, this is because you can't control yourself. And I just remember at that age, what does that mean? Like, why did I, like, just didn't think. And from that moment on, it just started the obsession. I just started to be very aware of food, but I really liked it. So I didn't know how to navigate around. I would watch my siblings. I'm the oldest of four, and I would watch my siblings all seem to have very normal behaviors and a normal relationship with food, and my parents had a normal, I mean, although, you know, we never really know where, you know, we never know what goes on in somebody else's head, but from what it appeared, I was the only one in my family that struggled with this disease. I grew up in Cape Cod, Massachusetts, in a very, what appeared to look like on the outside, a very perfect Norman Rockwell house. And on the inside, it was not like that at all. It was, I grew up with a very violent mother, and there were a lot of things that were happening that I kept a secret that were just inappropriate and that no child should ever have to go through. I was a ballerina. That was my, I would go to school and I'd go late to school. I would go to rehearsal and be picked up afterward and would go back to rehearsal. And somewhere for me, the combination of ballet and that discipline and my mother's dominating nature and the abuse that was happening at home, the food for me was just this perfect segue. I learned really early on that I have something that I can control that's mine, and that nobody else can tell me what to do with. So I just started developing very strange food behaviors, and some of you guys might not relate to any of this. I don't know. This is just my story. I'm going to be as honest as I can. And, you know, my eating disorder might not look like yours, but like you, I do have an eating disorder, and I do struggle with food and food behaviors. And I would do strange things that I recognize now as strange. At the time, I thought they were very normal. Anything from rolling food up into a ball, into only eating certain colored foods, into spitting and chewing, into binging, into taking every... I started with Dexatrim, and then it started to get way more aggressive, and started to do street label speed. Whatever it was, it didn't matter. I just knew that I just needed to control. I needed to control my body, because if I controlled my body, and if I weighed the certain weight that I had in my head, then my life would be perfect, right? Then everything would work out well. My mom would stop her behaviors, and my uncles would stop their behaviors, and I would go on to be a prima ballerina and get really good grades in college, and life would be fantastic if I could just weigh this. So I struggled from 7 on, started really taking all the diet pills and speed and the laxatives, and learned, I purged, but my mom is a dental hygienist, so she let me know really quickly that would be a shame to ruin your beautiful teeth. So I found something else that I could do that wouldn't affect the teeth for my mom. So it was really about, for so long, trying to please this person, really up until when I came into program 3 years ago. I had gone in and out of treatment centers and in and out of hospitals my whole life. I had been raised with a god that I feared, so I didn't understand why I was frightened of this god, and would watch my family go weekly to church and just not see any congruency at all, and there was no integrity, and so I just was very turned off by that, and I couldn't understand if this God was so amazing, why were all these things happening? So the food, the thoughts, I just became obsessed, and I just, for year after year, just isolated myself more and more, and just kept, I had this belief pattern that I was just eternally unique, and that these things that were happening to me was I was just this victim, and I was special, and nobody else could understand my problems, and everything that had ever happened to me was a result of the way I grew up, and it was everybody else's fault. I had no spiritual foundation, so I went to school, went to college, and my bulimia was caught by my RA at the time, and I was threatened to lose my scholarship if I didn't go to, at the time, what they told me was OA. And this was years ago. I did not understand. I didn't know what OA was. She explained, and I thought to myself, you know, I would be walking 8 to 10 miles daily. I restricted my food. I was actively, it was just using diuretics, laxatives. I was up to like 50 pills a day. And I was so angry that she would suggest OA. I was like, that's not me. Do you not see what I look like? What are you talking about? And I was so I learned, like most addicts do, to lie and to manipulate, and I got really good at it, and I told her and would forge signatures that I would attend these meetings so that I could keep my scholarship, and thank you so much, so you're the best RA, and just whatever it was to just placate her so that I could just still continue in my disease, but let her know that I was you know, attending what she needed me to attend to keep my scholarship. So that was my first, the first seed that was planted to me of OA years prior, and then I just forgot all about it, and then I was just off to the races, and I came out here, and I pretty early on had success in the career that I came out here for, and I had all the things externally that looked like my life was great, and that I had made it out of this small town, and I had become successful, and it looked on the exterior. I had the car, I had the house in Hancock Park, I had the deal, I had all of that, and I got married, and my eating disorder was more important to me than my marriage and my career. And I was with this person for 7 years, and 5 months into the marriage, he left while I was literally in the shower. I came out, and he was gone. And I just spun into this web of victimhood again. It was just, oh, you know, it's because I didn't grow up stable and I didn't have good role models. And everything, all I wanted to do was blame. And I got really sick. I ended up being hospitalized and for 3 months in a treatment center. And the plan at the time was not to survive. That was my intention, was like, I will show him in 1 year from the day that he left, this is what's going to happen to me. I am going to die, and he's going to have to deal with it. And as each month went on, and sicker I got, the more and more that made sense. And so I did. My heart stopped, and I went into treatment. And then I came out because I reached the weight goal that was necessary for insurance. The problem was I still had no spiritual foundation. I just ate the food, was no longer dehydrated. I had gained the 40 pounds, and I was off into the world. And then I met somebody else, and I moved in with this person, and my career started to take off again, and I started taking the laxatives and the diet pills slowly but surely, and started losing the weight. And then my dad drowned in a terrible accident, and that's for me where I was so angry. I was so angry with God, and people kept saying, just pray to God, and I was so angry. And I didn't care what was going to become of me. I just was... So I started, my disease just took over again because I had nowhere to turn. I didn't have a strong fellowship. I didn't have a fellowship. It was again, you know, why does all this stuff always happen to me? It was always about me. It wasn't just about, well, that's life, and that's sometimes what happens, and sometimes people get into accidents. What is it? What did I do? This is all about me. And I started taking, and like someone had mentioned before, it is a progressive disease. No matter what part of addiction our disease looks like, whatever it is that we're doing. And for me, I started picking up the diet pills, and then I wasn't losing enough, so I started more, and I started the speed, and it was just so much stuff. And I had ended up wandering the streets thinking I was in the military. And the cops came, because once I ended up home, I don't know how I got there, I ended up home, I beat up my boyfriend at the time, who was 6'4 and 250 pounds, and I managed to beat him up. Don't remember any of this. The cops came, and something in that moment was like, okay, I'm done. Like, it just knocked me into this place of complete surrender. And I remember going into the bathroom and on my hands and knees, and it was like little flashes of remembering back in college when my RA had told me about OA, and I just was like, this is it. I can no longer live like this. I can't. I'm done. So I flushed everything down the toilet, and I walked into an OA meeting the next day, and I went every single day. At this point, I also need to mention, I lost everything. I lost my beautiful sports car. My fiancé threw me out. I was homeless. I was living in a car that I had used and didn't really return to this person when she came back from her trip. So I was living in parking lots. I was still trying to go to meetings in my career, taking showers in public bathrooms, and had a bike that someone had lent me from Kmart, and I was biking all over the city every single day to get to a meeting. And if I couldn't get to an OA meeting, I would get to any recovery meeting, and I would just sit sometimes at the log cabin and I would just listen. And I was uncomfortable. I've scared many fellows away. A couple people won't even talk to me still. But I was a mess. And I just, that's what I had to go to. That was what I had to experience for me. I just had to completely surrender, and completely surrendering for me was relinquishing all control, which was so scary because I am a control freak, and I had to turn everything over and just ask the person, please help me, what do I do, what should I do, what's the steps, what's next, what do I read. It was just, I just needed to absorb everything. I ended up getting a recovery job. I needed to get a job because I had no money. What happened is, after 24 years of taking so many pills and being and starving for so long, and I was pushing down all these memories that I had. It was just my way of, you know, coping. We all have our, because I didn't have the food problem, I had a life problem. I just didn't want to deal with life. I didn't know how to deal with life on life's terms. So for me, by controlling the food, by eating only certain magical colored foods and having them this way and having these rituals, that would soothe me, and that would help with the memories. And what ended up happening for me is that 4 months into my recovery of not doing any of these, or struggling to not do any of these behaviors, or not taking any of these things, I started to remember everything. And I had a nervous breakdown. I decided that I got to the place of, at this point I didn't have a sponsor. So I was kind of just, I wasn't working the steps, I was just showing up. And you get it when you get it. You know, recovery is such a gift, and I'm so grateful that I'm here. But the first 4 months, for the newcomer, I do strongly urge that you do find your peeps and you find your sponsor and you latch on really quickly and you do start working those steps and you get rigorously honest really quick. I didn't for 4 months. I would show up, and I decided that it was all too much, so I wanted to, I was on my way on my bike to Century City to jump off a building, and I was caught by cops and the fire department, and I was taken into lockdown for 2 weeks. So that's where I decided, when I leave here, I need to get a spot. I need to really start working this program. And so I did. And I got a recovery job because I didn't want to be homeless anymore. I moved in with a friend who was amazing and let me live at her home for a year rent-free. I biked every day from Studio City to Culver City and back, and in between would bike to meetings. I worked my butt off to save my life in this program. And I'm so grateful. I love this program. I wouldn't be here without listening to all of you share your fears, your strengths, your hopes. It inspired me. I started working the steps, and I now, what it looks like today, 3 years into program, I have 7 amazing sponsees. One of them right here in front of me. I've worked all the steps. I, every single day, hit the floor with my knees, and every single night I do the same thing. I no longer look at life through the lens of victimhood. I take responsibility for my actions. When I am wrong, I promptly admit when I'm wrong. As embarrassing as that may be, I humbly go to the person, look them straight in the eyes, which I never was able to do before program. I could never look anybody in the eyes. It was just so uncomfortable. Like, they know everything about me. They're looking at me. They know what I'm thinking. They know that I'm thinking about food. They know that I'm thinking about how to control it. I just could never do it. Now I can look somebody in the eyes. And I surrender. I have no idea what my life is going to look like tomorrow. I literally have no idea. For me, what works best is when I just suit up and show up every single day and not have an agenda and not plan and not control for my disease. Having the willingness to take the next right action and to know that the rest of my life is none of my business, and that if sometimes that means I have to drive around my car and say, "I will not mind, I will not mind, I will not mind, I will not," and I've done it like all day long, then that's what I have to do to get out of it. Because left to my own devices and to my own brain, this doesn't function very well. But what does function well is when I surrender what I want over, because usually what I find is that what always ends up happening is always better than what I possibly could have imagined in my brain anyway. And my life today, I am I'm the happiest I've ever been. I'm the most humble I've ever been. A few years ago, if you had told me I was going to speak in front of a lot of people, being a comedian, I would have had a shtick, and it would have been some device just to keep you at arm's length and to make sure you all like me. Today, I'm not so concerned about that, because what you think about me is really none of my business, and some of you may like me, and some of you may not like me, and that's okay. I'm going to be okay. I'm going to be okay because I have a strong program. I have a strong faith in my higher power. I have a wonderful sponsor. I have wonderful sponsees. And I get to show up every single day and be of service. And to be of service and not to be in my own selfish thoughts is so liberating. And it allows me to stay present and in this moment right now. And when I'm present, I find that I'm so much happier because I'm not obsessing about the past or future tripping and anticipating about what my life is going to be or what I think it should look like. Instead, I've learned that acceptance is the key to happiness. And by staying present and by staying right here in this moment for today, that brings me peace. And I think that's all I have to say. I just want to say I'm really grateful, and if anybody is struggling, I get it. I was a mess, but it does get better. I promise you. I have to read the 9 step promises every single day, and I promise you, you will have a life beyond your wildest dreams. It might not look exactly what you planned it to look like, but your life will be amazing. Thank you. Great question. I was just asked what my relationship with exercise and dance is now. I didn't mention that I did struggle with exercise bulimia. And I still dance, and but for me, I have to be rigorously honest, and I have to check myself. And if I start to say, and it's really tricky, because as you get more recovery, you think, oh, I have all this recovery, I can sneak this, and no one will know. But I have to say to myself, are you doing this to lose weight, or are you doing this because this is part of your craft and your job, and it makes you feel good? And I trust myself enough to make those decisions, and if I don't, I will call somebody and say, hey, just want to let you know, I did this, and I want to check in about this, just so that I don't, because we've all heard, we're only as sick as our secrets. If I keep that a secret, then it becomes obsessive, and then I go, ooh, I just got away with that. What else can I get away with? And I can't do that. So I have to ask myself those questions. I was just asked a question coming from a fear-based God, and a God that I now surrender to. How did that, what was that evolution, how did that look like? That, at first I came in, I had lost my dad, and I had lost my dog of 13 years, and I didn't understand God. I would listen to people talk about God and higher power, and it would make me so angry, because I would see them so happy and talk about all these miracles are happening, and I'd be like, really? Because that's not happening to me at all. Like, this sucks. And so I would have to just think of my father and then my dog. If this is just what I did for myself. This is, like, whatever works. And I just would imagine that love. And I think it was just ultimate love. And I would just think about that. And then that just started to shift. You know, I didn't lock into that this is what it is. I just would lock into my father and my dog and talk to them just until it just felt right in my body, and it felt right talking to something. And then it just started to just organically evolve into what it is for me, which is just ultimate, that's personal, whatever it is to everybody. But for me, it's love and complete trust and complete something that I rely on, that I completely surrender to. When I was living in a car and parking lots and riding my bike, did I attempt to have a food plan? For me, what it looked like was I had been anorexic for so long, and I had been taking so many things to control that. For me, my food plan at that point was none of those behaviors, not taking anything, and allowing myself to have foods that I used to be frightened of, that I would control and not have. I allow myself to have those things and just get over the fear of them, and until I just didn't want them anymore. That's all my time. Thank you so much.